Listeners, we've discovered a product line that you've got to try. It's Principe, and we're going to be talking to the representative of that company, an Italian company, Federica Cerini, who's going to tell us all about it. Federica, is Principe also available in the U.S. now? Or is it just going to become available?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me and Principe with you today. Yes, Principe is available in the United States as well. Principe, it is a prosciutto and salumi company. We are the biggest producer of the prosciutto di San Daniele in Italy, but we also have a brand new facility with top-notch technology here in Columbia, Missouri, where we produce other type of salumi, salami, coppa, pancetta, that are made with Italian recipe. But yeah, we are the biggest producer of the prosciutto di San Daniele, and we are very, very, very proud of that.
Wow. And this is all done in Columbia, Missouri, you said?
No, correct? The prosciutto di San Daniele is made in Italy. In San Daniele del Friuli, in this little town in the northeast of Italy called San Daniele, instead we do other type of products here in the United States, coppa, pancetta, and other type of salami.
Now, the in Italy, your headquarters is where?
So we have different plants in Italy. The one where we produce the prosciutto di San Daniele is in San Daniele del Friuli in the northeast, and then we have other facilities. One is in Langrano, which is outside Parma, where we produce prosciutto di Parma.
Wow.
And then we have another one in Sossano, near Vicenza, where we produce other specialty products over there.
Now, is this a company, Principe, that's multi-generational? I mean, is it an old company? Is it family-based? Tell us what kind of company it is.
Yes, so Principe started as a family-owned company back in 1945. But then, it's very old. Now it's not anymore a family-owned company, but we maintained the same type of attention to the productions and to the products.
Uh-huh. Now, it's always difficult getting imported goods through the United States.
Yes, you're right, ma'am. You're right.
And everybody complains about how difficult it is. It's not getting any easier. But you're aiming for a bigger presence in the U.S., right?
Yes, absolutely. And that is why, the thing is the following. Some products cannot be produced in the United States. Like the prosciutto di San Daniele, it's a protected production.
Right.
So we cannot produce it here. But everything else, like some salami, some coppa, some pancetta, can be made in the United States. So what we did, we brought the expertise to produce the salami and the coppa, the pancetta from Italy to the United States, and we opened, this facility in Columbia, Missouri, in order to serve the market in the right way.
Right. Now, we actually were at a fancy food show in New York City a while back, and we must have talked to this one representative for about an hour on the differences between San Daniele and competitive companies on prosciutto. I think they compared San Daniele to Parma, and San Daniele became superior to Parma prosciutto. Tell us a little bit about what makes the difference between San Daniele and Parma prosciutto. Talk about the terroir, the processes, the flavors.
Absolutely. So first of all, I mean, they're both excellent products, let me just say that. But there are differences. So first of all, it's where these prosciuttos are made. San Daniele is made in the northeast, in this town called San Daniele del Friuli. Parma is made in the city of Parma. So geographically are different because Parma is situated more central north, and instead San Daniele del Friuli is northeast. San Daniele is in this particular position that allows a specific microclimate to create it. So it is located between the Adriatic Sea and the Alps. So basically you have, you know, the warm breeze that, you know, comes from the sea, and then you have the fresher breeze coming from the Alps, and it creates this perfect microclimate that it's, you know, great for the aging of this product. So this is the first main difference. The second difference is that it's the amount of product that it's out there. So the accessibility also of the product. You know, Parma has 140 producer plus, San Daniele only 31. So the amount
really?
Of product is produced is different. Yes, the amount of product that is produced is different. So Parma is well known all over the world, right? It's probably the most well-known prosciutto on the globe,
yeah.
And it's also more accessible. While San Daniele, it's a little bit more exclusive. It's more of a niche product.
I see.
You know, so then...
Well, there's also, I mean, it's a matter of getting the word out. I mean, for years you've never heard of San Daniele.
That, and that's what we are trying to do. We are trying to kind of make it more popular because it is an amazing product of, you know, an outstanding quality. So, you know, also in terms of flavors, there are some differences. So the San Daniele, when you taste it, is a little sweeter. It's more delicate. Parma is more salty because there are some differences during the production process. So, you know...
Do I remember hearing that some product pretending to be San Daniele was actually made in Canada?
Yes.
Am I remembering that correctly?
You are correct, sir. You are correct. So in Italy, for example, nothing can be called prosciutto di San Daniele unless it is prosciutto di San Daniele made in San Daniele del Friuli, because we have some organs called, you know, the consortium. So there is a specific consortium of San Daniele that protects that production. Around the world, this is not possible. And we had the incident with the Canadian producer that was calling their product prosciutto di San Daniele. So we, you know, we face these challenges sometimes. And, you know, we go through it.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a kind way of wording this, but it's run through all kinds of Italian products, olive oil, cheese, salumi, a great deal of misinformation, I think we'll call it, instead of lies. Do you have some kind of process so that people buying these products can tell whether they're real or not?
Well, yes. So for the protected production, like San Daniele and Parma, you will always find on a pre-sliced product, or even on the leg that you sell to, you know, for the daily counters, a stamp of the consortium. And you know, that's something that nobody else can place unless it is, you know, an authentic product. So that's the first step, I would say, that people need to check to understand if something is real or not. And again, nobody can import a product and call it something else in the United States, because thank God there's so many different stages of control. First of all in Italy, and then here when you import the product. So,
Well, where do people actually, what's the easiest way of getting these products that Principe makes?
So right now, Whole Foods has our San Daniele, both pre-sliced and also, you know, at the deli counter. So you can find it everywhere there. Otherwise, if you are in North California, we are in some Costco as well. Right now, you know, these are the two main outlets we have, and we are growing. So hopefully now in a couple of months we talk again, and I'll tell you more and more venues where we are.
Well, that's good. That's very good.
Yes, it is.
Where were we? Were we stayed someplace run by the king of Culatella? Who is
the, that? The prince of Culatella.
The prince of Culatella. Where were we?
I think, funnily enough, I have a folder in front of me, and for some reason, written on the bottom left corner, is Palavicina. And that's the Culatella place, and we had Culatella for breakfast, Culatella
lunch.
For lunch, Culatella for dinner, and in our collection of many 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 photographs, there is a picture of Miss Anne with two very large bronze pigs. And it looks like they're moving. They're not, but it actually looks like they're moving. But I think that the owner who we talked to said he had something like 6,000 Culatellas in his curing shop, which was very close to the Po River in northern Italy. And he said
yep.
one of the reasons it's so good is because of the dampness coming from the river.
Yeah.
Now is San Daniele enjoying the same kind of thing?
Well, in terms of like geographical position, you mean, or like more in terms of how it's used?
How it's produced, and as a result, how it tastes.
So, well. Again, like I'd say that a most important factor is played by, first of all, the raw material that you select. So San Daniele can be produced only from specific pigs of specific
right.
genetics. So that's the first step. Second,
yeah.
it is well, you select you need to make a great selection of any raw material that comes in. So you need to have good partners that work with you. You need to be very careful. And third, the location where you are. So, again, San Daniele being in this specific, kind of territory, it has the perfect climate factors to have the prosciutto, you know, aging in the right way and acquiring the right, let's say, flavors. Then also the way that you build your plant. It's very important as well. The attention that you give. So we have, for example, in our San Daniele plant, we have the prosciutto masters, which, by the way, they have 30-plus year experience in our company, that check the prosciutto every single day, including festivity. And just smelling the room and smelling the prosciutto, they know what stage is in and what it needs. Our prosciutto di San Daniele, it's a very clean product. There's only two ingredients, right? There's only the pork leg and the sea salt. So nothing else, it's put in there. And it's just a matter of, checking the product and make sure that the temperature is correct, that there is the right ventilation coming through the windows and, you know, all these factors. Make at the end is a great product.
And the testing's interesting. It involves sort of like drilling a hole in the center belly and extracting that and tasting it to make sure it's really the way it's supposed to be.
Yes, they use like this pig, which is like a horse bone, you place it inside the meat. You take it out, you smell it, and the prosciutto master knows where, in which stage it is of the aging. It's a very beautiful process, honestly.
So they call them the prosciutto masters. Do they have an even grander name than that?
We call them like this, because they truly are masters. The knowledge that they have and the know-how is insane. It is really, really insane. And there's not many people, honestly, in Italy that have, that capability of understanding the product.
Uh-huh. Well, see, we understood it. We understood it very well. We wolfed it. We wolfed it down in no time.
Market and sell and make a number of other products too. What are some of those you'd like to mention?
Here in the United States, we make some different type of salami.
Yes.
And then we make coppa and pancetta as well. And they're beautiful, beautiful product.
You sent us a charcuterie board and had little ceramic cups, and I couldn't figure out what you're supposed to put in those little cups.
Well, listen, like you could put probably some maybe dry fruits in there. You know, for example, the prosciutto, it's a beautiful product because you can actually pair it with so many things, with different type of fruits, with different type of vegetables, bread, breadstick, focaccia, different type of wines. So I would say in there, in a great charcuterie board, or salumi board as we like to call it, I would have maybe some dry fruits or some grape, fresh grape. It would be interesting. Yeah.
Right.
I used our samples with cheese.
Also, yeah.
I imagine that's a great pairing too, I'm guessing.
We listen, in Italy, for example, when we use prosciutto, for example, in the salumi board as an appetizer, so we mix always, prosciutto is always there, but then we had some salami, we had some coppa, we had some pancetta, some lardo, other things, and then we had cheese, different types, some aged cheese, some like very young cheese, and then always some dry fruits and some bread. But also in the summer, and that's something that Americans do not know sometimes, one of our favorite dishes for the summer, which is very refreshing, is cantaloupe and prosciutto. Paired together, it's amazing. Because, you know, the cantaloupe is very sweet, and then you have the prosciutto, especially San Daniele, it's like it's a little sweeter, but it's also salty, and it's the perfect, perfect, perfect pairing. I always offer to everybody that when they come to my house in the summer.
Wow. Well, now your website is principefoods.com or .it.
Let me double check. Karina, do you know what it is? I do remember the correct website. Let me double check. It's com.
I wrote
it's
down com.
Principefoods.com. Yes. Principefoods with the S at the end .com.
Right. What kind of reception are you getting in your marketing efforts in the U.S.?
So right now we are we have different profiles. So, you know, we are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are trying to work with, different type of influencers. So we're basically part of the main consumer-facing challenge, channels, right? So we are trying to create weekly content, which are educational. So usually we have educational content, pairing content, and recipe content. So we try to show people how to use the product and to educate about them as well. You know, especially we were talking about salmonella before. Salmonella is not as well known as Parma, right? We are trying to change this. We want to make sure people understand that salmonella is an excellent, is a milestone of the Italian culinary tradition. And the only way to do so is to educate them.
Here's what someone told us. It was at a fancy food show, and it was the person who told us more about San Daniele and whether or not it was genuine or not. And what was I going to say now? I've forgotten what I was going to say.
It happens all the time to me. Don't worry.
How to evaluate or what? The difference between? Hello?
Are you saying that to me, Liz?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. You were going to tell us about how what the guy told us at the fancy food show.
He talked about the quantity of pigs and the quality, very very particularly, the quality of the pigs that made San Daniele, and the quality of the pigs that made Parma. He illustrated the San Daniele value proposition by explaining how many of the pigs that are used to make San Daniele are how many of them are rejected because the quality is not there. Now I remember. That's pretty good.
No, absolutely. Like again, I can speak a little bit about this. So. So in order to produce Daniele, but also Parma, we need to use a specific breed of pigs. And there's like a few different Italian genetics breed that we can use, like two or three. These specific breeds allow us to grow a pig that is very heavy. You need to have a heavy pig in order to produce an excellent prosciutto. The pig is grow until 9 months and then it gets slaughtered. However, the way it grows, it's very important because it needs to be a gradual growth. The way it feeds, the pigs get fed is very important as well. So it's vegetarian diet mainly, concentrating on high quality cereals and whey. After that, the pigs go to the slaughterhouse, and in our example, in San Daniele, for example, in the San Daniele plant, we have a refusal rate of about 15 to 18%. Meaning, the fresh legs come in, we check: are there tears? Are there hematomas, bruises? Is the weight correct? Because we will not select anything that it's below, for example, I think it's 13 kilograms or above 17 kilograms. So we have all these like specific things that we look after to make sure that we already start from an excellent product. You know, after that, it's on us, but also the starting point is great because, you know, at the end of the day, we want to present to the world a perfectly curated product. In all the aspects of it, not just, you know, because it has the name. So we need to make sure that we are the first guarantor that the product is the highest possible quality that you can find.
A pig grower or keeper grower, I guess, in the UK it told us how important it was to make sure the pigs were happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is.
They try to make them not realize when they're going to slaughter because it makes them nervous.
Yes, I heard that too. And another thing that I wanted to mention is that we cannot grow, like, you know, the farmers that grow the product for Prosciutto di San Daniele or even Parma, they can only grow that pigs in specific regions, cannot be grown anywhere. You cannot farm that specific pigs everywhere because the consortium to the organ that control and make sure that the products are to standard, as a regulation that says, you know, these regions, because of certain reasons, right? Like, I don't know, the type of, you know, ground that there is, the climate that there is, can actually farm these pigs and others not.
Right. It's very complicated. It's not the...
It is.
I mean, it takes a lot of explaining to...
I know.
Except if you just taste it, that helps.
But, you know, it's...
In the last analysis, they say, it just tastes damn good.
I mean, hopefully, well, you know, we are able to have all these, you know, we, thanks to this complicated but beautiful and authentic process, we are able to, you know, go to give to the world this amazing, amazing product.
Right. No, I agree. I totally agree. It's good that it's going to be more accessible in the U.S.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, you still have a lot of education work to do to get people to understand,
it
I
is.
Think. So,
it is,
so you
but
have
we have
your
also
work.
A great plan. We have also a great plan with our marketing team to make more educational videos, more educational content, and, you know, make this product known to most.
Well, if you want someone who will really enjoy it and will tell the world about it, I'll give you my address.
Absolutely, with pleasure. Actually, absolutely.
Well,
we will talk after, so you can tell me all your information.
Federica, we're so pleased that you could take the time to talk to us, and we're so pleased that you're getting a bigger footprint in the United States with your son, Daniele. And I'm sure you're going to break through the wall of misinformation that's out there. So good luck to you. Much success to you. And again, grazie molto.
Thank you so much to you, and it was a real pleasure. And yes, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, maybe we'll be back to Italy soon. That'll be good. We need that. Yeah.
Let us know.
Okay. All right. And again, thank you very, very much, and much continued success.
Thank you so much. Likewise.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
There she goes. Stephanie Berwick, why did you think that you should make pots desserts?
That's a great question, Anne. Well, this all started with cooking competitions about 10 years ago, and I went to the World Food Championships, was invited. You had to win your way into the entry, and it was held in Vegas at the time. So 2 years in a row, I actually went there, and my husband is my so-called partner in crime. He's actually a chef. And
oh,
I was working in corporate world. Yes, he is. And
where
so we
is he
had
chef?
He chefs for corporate dining for Compass Group, a division of Compass.
Okay,
Group.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
okay.
we had some themes, you know, both years, and one of them was pasta and the other was dessert. So we came up with the chocolate ravioli, one of the current flavor variations, which is peppermint at the time.
Uh-huh. No, I don't know of any Italian
dessert. With all due respect, Lydia, it sounds kind of really crazy.
Okay.
I'm a dessert lover, but it still sounds kind of crazy.
It's actually chocolate pasta is in certain parts of Italy, you know, they have their regions.
Yeah.
There's a, it's a thing, you know, so there's chocolate pasta, chocolate fettuccine, you know, dessert type pasta is it originated from Italy.
Really? I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've ever had, I mean, I've been in Italy constantly, like most of my life, since I was a teenager. And I can't remember ever having chocolate pasta.
Well, we're trying to bring it. We're trying to bring attention to it, and I hope that you received the samples and at least tried them, and then tell me how crazy it is.
Peter's the one who's been eating it all. He says it's crazy, but he's eating it all.
I only have two buttons left.
Okay, good.
Is that all you have
that's
left?
That's encouraging.
Perhaps you can explain to our audience what I mean when I say that there are only two buttons left.
So two buttons meaning two ravioli and in
two
the cavities.
Two raviolis in little cavities in a purple container.
You ate this all?
I have two left.
Wow.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I would think if you didn't like it, you wouldn't have eaten it all.
Now, one thing that I remember observing on one of our many trips to Italy is that around about 6 p.m., the mayor of the house would be headed for the pizza shop.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't for pizza, it was for pasta.
Mm-hmm.
So she would go trotting off down the street and come back laden with pasta, and I thought maybe that's where the chocolate ravioli concept came from.
I love making pasta, and I always have, you know, from scratch savory for dinner. And we were just brainstorming what we could do, something different for this World Food Championships competition.
Sure, right.
And it was just a fusion of, pasta and dessert. And so that's how it all came about.
I'll be darned.
And you undoubtedly won, right? That's the rest of the story.
Well, we were competing. We were amateurs, right? And we were competing with professional chefs. So I didn't win the entire competition. The dessert ravioli did place well on its own. So we did okay. We did what we wanted to do.
Are you still going? Are you going to Sofia
no.
this year again?
No. My husband kind of said he didn't want to do any more competitive cooking. It's a lot of work, you know. And he was my sous chef. It's a lot of pressure and sometimes disappointment, you know. But, you know, we thought maybe we could just start a business with this, and here we are.
That's great. How long have you been doing it for business?
So the business I incorporated last March, so just over a year. But we kind of call our official launch date August of last year, so 2023, so less than a year. And that was really when we started doing some pop-up markets locally and, you know, got our food inspections and things like that all aligned. And then we got into our first local grocery store in August. So that's kind of the date that it was great. It was really exciting.
Now, where are you now? Do you have a shop or do you put in other people's shops?
So, yeah, we don't have our own shop. Eventually, my husband and I would like to open a restaurant, and, of course, we would serve them there. This would be a prequel to that, you know, and getting ourselves into a food business. But we are in Rockaway Beach, New York City. We're in Queens. And, you know, most of the shops so far, the grocery stores and food service that we're in today are local here, or at least in the Northeast region.
Oh, well, that's great. Now, if somebody wants to buy your product, can you do e-commerce, or how are you set up right now?
Yeah, we do have a website, and, you know, I was selling e-commerce direct-to-consumer through the holidays last year, mainly still to understand our consumer market and, you know, our target market and who would enjoy these types of desserts and price points and things like that. And it's, you know, it's a cold slash frozen product, so it's very hard, as I'm sure you realize, to ship in the warmer climate. And so we were doing great in the colder climate. And so once January hit, I said I wanted to, you know, move into wholesale and that be the main focus, so we don't have to worry about shipping cross country and in a warmer climate.
Right.
So you're selling in a relatively limited geographical area then?
That's correct, yeah. But we're also just starting out, you know, in January.
Oh, sure.
Was only a few months ago, and we just had our largest grocery store. It's local here to Connecticut / New York, and they just opened a New Jersey location called Stu Leonard's. And I grew up going there, so it's really kind of come full circle for me, which is nice.
Oh, nice.
And they ordered, 100 cases.
Oh, wow.
And we were doing,
How did you scale up that fast?
It was a lot of long days and nights, some 2 a.m., you know, leaving the kitchen, the commercial kitchen nights. It was pretty much our life on hold for about a month. So now we understand how to do that, and I've hired a couple of people now for the kitchen and to help us in other places. But yeah, it was difficult.
Yeah, it's also not difficult. I mean, it's also difficult now finding people to hire in the restaurant industry,
mm-hmm.
or in the food,
yeah.
Period.
I have a new hire in the kitchen tomorrow who I'm training for the first time. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, you know, I'd love to know, how do all these people who don't work pay their grocery bill? What do they do?
Expensive. The groceries have gone up so much, I know.
I mean, you know, you can't get window washers, you can't get house cleaners, you can't get anything.
People, mm-hmm.
I mean, the developer is working next door to our house. And he brings in people from Guatemala.
Right. Yeah.
So
well,
what about all these people then? How do they pay for anything?
I don't know, but I'm going to be in that situation because I left my high-paying, you know, finance and technology career after 20 years just in January. So we'll probably run out of money at some point. Hopefully not.
Okay. So that's where you came from Wall Street?
Pretty much, yeah. Technology mainly. My undergrad and master's were in finance and accounting many years ago, and then I found my way into technology, and I left, you know, my last job in that sector in January to run this business full time, and I left as a vice president.
But you know, you're not alone. You realize that. I mean, we interview specialty food people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many people left the community you left.
I'm definitely finding that too. And it's a nice way to, talk to other founders, you know, and have a lot of commonality. But I think the reason you find that is, you know, corporate world is great and I learned a lot. And now I have the experience, I feel like, that I can be an entrepreneur. And it's a new career, right? I wanted a big change in my life.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But you like it.
I love it. It's scary, and there's a lot of emotions. But I love it. Yes.
why don't you go down the list of products you have available so that our listeners can drool over them?
Absolutely. Yeah, so today we have four major flavors of the chocolate ravioli that we focus on, especially for wholesale, for the retail grocers, and for food service. So we try to keep it simple for ourselves as we're learning. And those are strawberry cheesecake, and then we have peanut butter and jelly, and then fig.
Oh, classic.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one is peppermint, which is the original from the cooking competitions.
Uh-huh.
We do have a seasonal product that is online, you know, available now, and anytime we have a little bit of inventory, we kind of make it to order, and that's a piña colada ravioli.
Okay.
It's really good, but it's very seasonal, you know, so we just wanted to kind of leave that as people can order it, but we're not going to push it wholesale. Uh-huh. And then we have a sustainable product as well, which I use the scraps of dough, the chocolate dough scraps from the ravioli making, to make a chocolate fettuccine.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. What kind of sauce do you put on a chocolate fettuccine?
You can go savory or you can go sweet. So
yeah,
the savory.
You can go savory too. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a short rib recipe I have on my website, and I put it on the packaging as well. So you could do a short rib recipe with the dark chocolate fettuccine and a nice, you know, kind of short rib sauce. And then, you know, a dessert, of course. So whipped cream, maybe a little strawberry sauce or raspberry sauce.
Wow. Well, you know, a lot of restaurants, the chefs, well, not now, but like maybe 10, 15 years ago, they discovered that you could put chocolate with things like pot roast and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We went through that for a while.
Yeah, like so. A mole, right? Like a mole sauce.
Well, there, I mean, it's not far removed from mole, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I remember making this complicated mole. I don't know how many ingredients are involved.
Yeah,
it's a long process.
I
remember when you were thinking about that, it turned out I was doing some consulting in Mexico at the time. So Anne wanted me to find out what kind of chocolate you use to make mole sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to all the shops in the neighborhood around the hotel I was staying at, and no one understood what I was saying, first of all.
True.
But they also thought the concept of chocolate mole was perhaps overrated.
So I imagine from our conversation that you're kind of getting your ducks in a row before you take big leaps.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we're doing that, you know, through a few different ways. One is we started out, and mainly myself, my husband still works full time, but you know, I have a business development background as well, you know, from the finance and technology career. So I'm pretty good at sales, right? And I know that it's my business, right? So I know my pitch. And so I took the concept to the independent stores here in New York City to start off, you know, slowly understand what it means to go wholesale, you know, even the language and the acronyms.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's a whole new world for me. And so, you know, then we got into this Stu Leonard's regional grocer, and that was just a big leap very quickly. So I don't, you know, I don't want to stumble, if you will, and or as much as possible. So now I'm making sure that we sell through as well. So it's, you know, kind of that cliche of it's easy to get on the shelf, but it's actually harder to sell through and get those reorders. So I'm making sure that we don't go too fast where we're not going to get those reorders and we get discontinued for some reason.
Right.
And somehow there's a guy who says he's pretty clever about business in New York City, but he's not making chocolate ravioli. he's doing something else which is much less interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you identify a market before you identified the product? Because you kind of skipped over that when we were talking about
mm-hmm.
it.
I would say the opposite. I think that the concept of the chocolate ravioli was what I wanted to start with. So the product was the first, you know, creativity. And then we refined it, of course, in terms of recipe. And we made some changes even from customer feedback throughout last year. As I was, you know, attending and selling at the local markets, and then, you know, through the online orders, through the holidays, that's how we started really looking at branding and target markets. Mm-hmm. And price point goes in there too, right? So we know what our costs are. We know what price point we need to sell at in order to make a profit, even wholesale, of course. And, you know, it's not going to be a $5.99 product. So that helps you define your market a bit. It's definitely a little bit higher end.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of specialty food people have to make that choice.
Yeah.
It doesn't go both ways. I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
At least in the early days, right? Maybe 5 years from now, we can get those costs down and it's a wider market. But it's also, as you both said, it's different and unique and new. And so, you know, I get different results and reactions. I think it's helped me to find that the market has to be for people that are willing to try something new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I'm not focused on that, then, you know, people may not want to even try it. So that's something I do through demos, right, and sampling to make sure that we are getting in front of people that want to try something new but may not just buy it off the shelf without a little push.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're hitting the proper timing for everybody wants something new, I think.
I think
coming out of the pandemic, I think everybody wanted everything new.
So we want to be something different. A different dessert, especially in the freezer section as you're grocery shopping, than, you know, what's traditionally out there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think you've done all your homework, and you deserve, and you have the background for it. I can see success written large in your history here.
There's some days that, you know, I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing, but generally, like I said, I love it, and I like being an entrepreneur. It's very challenging, right?
Oh, it is, yeah. What amazes me is how many people take the leap without having any business background whatsoever.
Right.
Because we talk to a lot of the food, especially food people, and so many of them make that leap without ever thinking about the end result of it and how you get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or you have to have a good network, right, if you don't have the background. Or maybe another founding partner, you know, to go, don't go it alone. And it is lonely, too, when you don't have that partnership, right, and someone else to bounce ideas off of. But, I'm enjoying it, and I'm glad I get to use my experience and, you know, my former career.
Yeah, I mean, but there are so many people who have made it that you can network with. I mean, do they have networks sometimes are good and sometimes aren't, but is there a special network for people like you? What would you turn to by way of inspiration for connections?
You know, the Startup CPG Group, I don't know how familiar you are with them, but they're, a big Slack group, a community of people like myself, and I think it's grown to over 20,000 members. So that's
what's it called?
Startup CPG, like consumer packaged goods. Yeah. They've been a wealth of knowledge for me. And I've met some, you know, even I would call them friends now at this point, you know, throughout the last few months. So that's been a really great network for me. It's also just a wealth of information. You can go on to their Slack channel or website or Instagram and, you know, social media pages and find typically answers you're looking for. Or you can just connect with someone that knows, has gone through it before.
I have a feeling there's a slot in the Today Show for someone just like you.
One can hope. We're still so early. I'm just happy to have these, you know, these interviews and starting to get some notice in the market. Yeah.
Well, we have much enjoyed talking to you.
And yes, definitely.
In my case, I'm in love with chocolate ravioli, and
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. And listeners, don't forget to keep your eye out for pasta zert and anything that's going to emanate from that in the future, which is going to be a lot, I think. Stephanie, continue having fun with what you're doing and continue having success with what you're making.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Yeah. All right.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Bye now.
I want to make sure that I have it saved.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the recording.